We are back on Tell a Band to Go Home. Thanks for being here. My name is Jeff, I've been talking about the Mariposa Folk Festival. Went there last weekend and just had a wonderful, wonderful time. Always wanted to go there, and it was quite a revelation for a number of reasons. It's a very, very laid back festival. People are not really generally in a hurry to go anywhere. Nobody like rushes up to the front of the stage. There's very little like dancing or movement of any kind. It's just a wonderful thing. It reminds me a lot of the Trout Forest Music Festival, where I'm keen and eager, and I can always just come and put my chair right at the front of the stage, pretty much any time, unless Mike Welfley's fat head is right in front of me. I can always see pretty great and have a great time. And it's like that out there too. There are a bunch of stages, a lot of them actually. But still, people just kind of hang in the background and relax so I always got a great spot where no matter where I went, and I thought that was pretty awesome. So I got to see a lot of things, and a lot of things, there wasn't a lot that I hadn't seen before at the festival, but there was enough that I had seen before to excite me. But Gretchen Peters was one of those people who had never seen, always wanted to see, and got the chance, really enjoyed it. And this next guy is someone who, like I said, I've played a number of times on the show. I knew how great he was, but I just never had the opportunity to go and check him out. And man, oh man, am I so glad that I finally got the chance to go see John Brooks. He's just a tremendous, tremendous songwriter and a great storyteller. And I think we might even chat with John in just a few minutes here. But I want to play a couple of songs because some of them just, you know how it is when you go see someone live and they tell the story and they just bring a song to life. That was the case with so many of these songs that I got to hear out there, including this one, which he dedicated to Ron Hines, which I thought was a real nice thing to see. So here's John Brooks with a song he sent out to Ron Hines. This is from his fine album, Moth Nor Rust.
No, we can't take that old letter from my first lover. No, we can't take anything onto that some great other. Every lone sock and every diamond, we can't prove it, 'cause everybody knows. If it's not love, we can't take it when we go. No, we can't take it when we go, when we go. Wherever we go, if it's not love, we can't take it when we go. To that place where moth nor rust cannot touch us past this dust. If it's not love, we can't take it when we go. We can take our ex-wives' laughs and our mother's worry lines. We can take all that which we gave to those of whom we had to help and of whom that taught us most. But if it's not love, we can't take it when we go. We can't take it when we go, when we go, wherever we go. If it's not love, we can't take it when we go. To that place where moth nor rust cannot touch us past this dust. If it's not love, we can't take it when we go. And all our prizes and impulse buys, they will be fast appraised, and into one bargain bin they'll be casually thrown, until what's favored and all forgotten will delicately be told. If you're not love, we can't take you when we go. No, we can't take it when we go, when we go, wherever we go. If it's not love, we can't take it when we go. To that place where moth no rust cannot touch us past this dust. If it's not love, we can't take it when we go. La da la da na 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 la da. La da la da na 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 la da.
Oh, just a great lyricist. That last part there, John, that really struck me. That la da 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 na na na, brilliant,
oh, yeah.
Brilliant lyrics.
Thank you.
You must have labored over those.
yeah.
John Brooks, yes. It is so nice to talk to you. I've been listening to your records for years, and I don't know what it is, but there's something when I go see someone live, the songs come to life in a way that often they don't on the record for me. So finally getting to see you live was a real treat. You've made it hard. You never come to Winnipeg. When was the last time you were here? Have you been? You've been here at some point, right?
Let's see, 2008. I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the last time. I did a home roots house concert tour in 2011, sorry. And so I did a couple house concerts in Winnipeg back then, but that, I guess 2011 was the last time I was anywhere near your place.
How did I miss that, man? Oh man. It got to see it at the Mariposa Folk Festival, and then I loved it so much I went all the way to Toronto to see you on Sad Monday the next day. And I gotta warn you, the last time I did something like that was when I first saw Del Barber. Do you know Del Barber from here?
Yes. Yeah, I did a gig with him a couple years ago, actually.
Yeah, he's awesome. And the first time I saw him, I just had to go see him the next night. I loved it so much, and I've become a bit of a stalker.
I'm like that too, actually. I'm a bit, I don't know what the word is.
passionate? I like that word.
Yeah, trying to think of the word now, actually. I latch on to something new that inspires me, and then I don't let go of it. It's pathological. That's the word I'm looking
yes.
for. So I don't know if that's what you're experiencing in my case.
Absolutely.
That's what I do.
No question.
Winnipeg, there's not much for me to do there because, it's a strange place to get to geographically from Toronto. Like,
yes,
there's no justifying it economically to drive to Winnipeg for a couple gigs. There's nothing in between.
Having done it, it's a long, long drive, John. It's nice, but it's long.
It's a beautiful, inspiring drive, but
yes.
to do it every year doesn't make sense if you
no.
can go and do 10 gigs in the space of 10 days going south instead.
Absolutely.
So like, that's really the only reason. There's just been other options. And, one day I guess they'll invite me to the Winnipeg Folk Festival, but until that happens, I don't know that I'm going to have more
know.
Than... 9 super fans that live in the Winnipeg area.
Well, hopefully our friend Devin Latimer is listening. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Trout Forest Music Festival, but if Devin Latimer is listening, I want you to be there.
Well, I was there in 2011 and I want to go back.
You were there?
Yes. Yeah, I was there.
I
never enjoyed any main stage time, but I was there in 2011 in one of the strangest places I've ever been. That was a great festival, though, I remember.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Okay. Well, it turns out that I've just missed my opportunity, so it's my own damn fault. But
you were there in 2011, I guess you're saying.
I'm there every year. I mean, I know I've missed at least one, so maybe that was the one. I don't know, but if I was there, then I'm even more embarrassed than than I feel right
no,
now.
No, that was a fun fest, actually. Yeah. I like them.
Okay, well, hopefully we can get you back there then. So I want to know a bit more about how you came to music. Sounds like you came by it honestly. Your dad was a drummer, right?
He played drums for 20 plus years in kind of a country waltz band, and it was more like a weekend hobby yeah. for him. Really, I shouldn't say it was really that professional. He didn't. It wasn't his income, but he'd been a musician all his life.
He had the love, so.
Yes, and the drum set was in the basement. So I think, like most musicians, the first instrument we start playing is a percussive one. So I was a drummer as a kid.
Yeah, but how did you become a songwriter? Because it seems to me that songwriting seems to be your forte, your passion.
I would say so. The songwriting didn't happen until it was born of necessity in the early 90s. I was in a band in Toronto, and I was a keyboard player. I played Hammond organ, and I played with a bunch of local bands in the Toronto scene in the early 90s. And someone had to sing, and someone had to write the songs, and I became that guy. So I did that for about 89 to 95. I think the Horseshoe Tavern was our last gig, February 20th, 95.
What was the band, just out of curiosity?
We were called the Nord Union.
Okay.
And we were good, but I always think we were like Wilco before Wilco ever came to be an idea.
You're ahead of your time.
Well, at the time, it was what we called directionless. You know, like we were this, we were that, people would compare us to everybody from Blue Rodeo to the Allman Brothers to the funk scene of the 70s. We even had a little bit of Nashville country in us. It was a really strange collision of styles and influences, and we never cared.
Yeah.
We never cared about that, and that was one reason why we disappeared into oblivion, because at the time in the 90s, everything had to be so genre focused and structured, and it had to be something that you could actually identify and define immediately and easily. And so we never survived that,
right.
Which was okay, because I think back about those times and I had no real energetic and moral purpose behind why I was doing music, other than because I loved it and I wanted to be famous. Like
yeah.
that was, which is the story of everybody in their 20s.
Pretty much, yeah.
So that died, and then and I didn't buy a guitar until 95, and then I ended up going to Europe. I mean, the short version of the story is really is and it may come to some people's ears as a negative thought or something unfriendly, but I don't really believe anybody's a songwriter before they're 40 anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, it's on rare occasions and at different periods in modern history, occasionally a kid comes around with something compelling and original to say, but that's more rare than it is often.
Right.
And I mean, in the generation I grew up, that was less likely to find. And now today, it's even more rare to find.
Right.
So people ask me, you know, how long did it take you to write this song or that song? And the only accurate answer is whatever age I was when I wrote it. That's how long it took to write that song.
Like, yeah, I guess.
How long did it take to write a song like Mercy? Well, that song took me 44 years. And I'm not being totally facetious there.
Yeah. But I'm guessing that the songs that you were initially writing weren't the same kind of songs you are now. So when you became a songwriter, do you have teachers who you modeled yourself after, or was this just sort of a style that you kind of developed on your own? Like how did you end up writing these powerful story songs?
That's a good question, because I think I write fairly uniquely, and I never thought that before until a bunch of people started to respond to some of the stories behind the songs, and they just couldn't imagine that you'd ever write a song by interviewing people or I mean, I've always been more inspired by all my books and poets. Those are the true inspirations and my true teachers. I mean, as far as putting songs together, I might be able to cite three or four, you know, well-known songwriters where I would, you know, parrot their instincts. And I did that when I started writing songs early on. And by early on, I mean, I guess the late 90s, really.
Yeah.
I never devoted myself to being a songwriter until 2004. But there was a period in the late 90s where I, for about 10 minutes anyway, where I thought I was going to be a songwriter. That idea was crushed when I realized that in order to write the kind of music I wanted to write, I needed an education, which I didn't have.
Right.
So I put myself through school relatively late in life. I only just graduated, actually. I mean,
really?
I finally got a degree at York, and I technically graduated in October. And I never really talk about that because people seem to think that that's not so sexy a thing when it comes to songwriting. But for me, it's the libraries of the world and the ancient stones all over the world that inspire my songs.
Yeah. What was it, an English degree you took or?
Well, it was a mess of things. I started out with politics. Then I went to music, and then I dabbled in architecture, and I eventually discovered that it was English that covered all of that. So I became an English major about halfway through, and finally finished this huge double major in English and music. And wow. I've been chipping away at it for years. Like, there might be a summer where I didn't get any really significant festivals, so I'd take a summer course, you know, and stuff like that. Anyway, I never looked at it as a plan B, although it could be a plan B. I never looked at it that way. It was more of a source of renewed inspiration.
Yeah. You're obviously a lover of learning, and that goes into that.
Learning is the only passion that never leaves us.
Yeah.
I mean, everything leaves us. Like, the love fades even.
Yeah.
I mean, what are the passions in life? I mean, love, lust, anger, even religious fervor. I mean, everything that stokes the fire within us seems to fade over time. Even physical fitness, everything except for one thing, and it fascinates me, and that's the curiosity to continue to learn. That's the one thing that never seems to go away.
Uh-huh.
That's actually the horror of depression and mental illness. Because that's what depression does, I think. It kills that one thing that's left to us that always excites us and inspires us.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought of that.
Well, I'm not there, so I'm thankful for that. But learning is and curiosity.
Yeah.
Curiosity is everything. I mean, I wouldn't be compelled to do anything creative if I had no curiosity for people. This is why I always pull my hair out when people suggest that there's something negative about what I do, you know? That just drives me crazy. The creative spirit couldn't be more positive, you know, in its essence. Like, it's the most positive, hopeful. I even look at it as an act of love. That's why I say there's only two kinds of songs in this world, love songs or unfinished ones.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So Yes, okay. So I wrote a song about a guy with, you know, post-traumatic stress, you know. Yeah, on the surface, I suppose a literal mind who isn't, the sharpest knife in the drawer, or just plain lazy thinking, they might walk away and think, oh yeah, that John Brooks guy sings about downer stuff and negative. That's never my intent. Never, ever, ever, ever my intent. My intent has always been the absolute opposite of that.
Yeah. Sorry.
I was going to tell you, you know, the reason why you go see someone live and suddenly everything makes sense versus playing the CD. CDs have never worked well that way. We do the best we can with CDs, but I don't know an artist that even the ones I absolutely love, even some of the ones that rub me the wrong way, I never fully understand the full story unless I see them in a live setting. The CDs are like a distant second best.
Yeah. They're good to have, though, you know.
Well, that's not to say that there aren't classic great CDs that I can listen to over and over and over and over and over again, but they're limited in what they can accomplish.
Yeah. Tell me a bit about that process you talked about, the interview process, because I talk to so many songwriters about how they work, and some of them just wait for the song to float in through the air. Like, the songs are out there, they just have to catch them. Other people sit down and try to write something every day, and they work at it and try to chisel away at something. It sounds like yours is kind of different.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of the, I think it might be some kind of old Russian folklore, but the idea, it's a story about the fox and the hedgehog. And I find this, I'm going to admit right up the top that it's a generalization, but it's a generalization that nonetheless leads to a lot of interesting talk on the business of creativity and different minds.
Uh-huh.
The fox is an animal, a creature that adapts to anything and everything and acts fast, has massive output, great survival skills, can write a song about anything, and can perform anywhere and very quickly and adeptly. The hedgehog is, you know, using the analogy of the songwriter in this case, the hedgehog knows one good and true thing. And the two, you know, that whole fable or whatever it is, I always like applying it to different songwriters. But I'm not that guy that goes around. I'm neither compelled to write a song a week, nor am I actually able to. It takes me a long time to write a song, and I tend to think things out. Not in terms of songs, but in terms of albums. So, you know, I have a lot easier time writing 10 songs that are somehow uniquely related or connected or in conversation with each other. That seems to be a better means to the end I'm working towards.
Yeah.
That's not to say that on occasion songs do come to you very quickly, and some of those are the best ones, but whenever I'm doing songwriting workshops and that, I go to my way to warn people, young songwriters, that this is not to be counted on. These are rare gifts, and I think songwriters can be a bit irresponsible when they talk like that, as if these things are snatched out of the air. There's more to it than that. There's a whole other side of that discussion, which is, you know, which suggests that it's waste and work that creates good songs,
right,
where it takes a long time, a long period of editing, of research, of developing a melody, of cutting out cliches, of just weeding out things that you don't even know are there until you've lived with the song for 4 months. That is the experience I'm more used to.
Yeah. Your records are all kind of, well, like you said, they're thematically linked, the songs together. Do you start putting a record together with that idea, or do you have songs and then kind of look for a way to find more songs that fit in with those?
Yeah, that's generally how it works. I think it might... I mean, I've never had any shortage of general ideas about stuff to write about. If anything, the uniting theme is a way to keep things focused for me.
Uh-huh.
I don't generally sit down and say, what's the theme? What's the theme of our present time? And let's write 10 songs about that. It doesn't work like that either. It you know, about 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 months after the last album is out, I look around in my micro recorder and on my notebooks and my iPhone, and I collect the things that are working, the things that look like they're going to end up being good songs.
Yeah.
And then I look at those 5 things. Usually they're 5 songs waiting to be finished, or maybe they are finished, and then I look at those songs and I try to see what the line that links them all, and then I go from there. So, I mean, the Murder Ballads one, the last album I did, was a much simpler thing. That was, I mean, I had this idea of this, you know, 12 and a half, 13-minute Rampage song, and I really wanted to record that because underneath the thinly veiled idea that it was a murder ballad, it was something that was lacking in my repertoire. It was outrageous musical theater. It was part stand-up comedy. It had a lot of things that I could use in a live situation.
Yeah.
But there's no way I could imagine ever just putting that song on an album. Like, if it wasn't the whole album, a bunch of murder ballads, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and so that's where the murder ballad thing came out of. It basically came out of that one song. Mind you, that one song is, for some people, equivalent to 4 songs.
Is that the only good thing is an old dog? Is that what you're talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's really a big... I always sigh when I hear that I'm a protest singer. There's many worse things one can be called, but it's never been my aim, and I've always thought that protest-type songs are really... a category that's been invented because of a lot of other bad kind of songwriting at the time.
Yeah.
Like, because have you ever read a great book or stood in front of a great work of art or memorized a great poem that wasn't in and of itself a form of protest? The concept of subversiveness or protest to me is inherent in anything worthy of, you know, publishing or sharing publicly.
Yeah.
So, but the funny thing about The Old Dog is that song is actually, though it does use an unreliable narrator, Trevor, it really is the most overt protest kind of song I've ever recorded. It's really just a protest about the corporatization of everything, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I got sidetracked there. You're asking about songs and how they're constructed, and lately I've been... Like today, for example, I ran into a person who lives in the building behind me. We always run into each other walking the dog. And she told me about how her co-op just took in a Syrian refugee family. And for months now, I've been sort of putting the feelers out, you know, trying to find such a subject to interview for a song, because that would... certainly be a song that would be on the pulse of all things Canadian at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's also something that's beyond my experience. I need to mine the details, physical and emotional, and, you know, hopefully I'll be able to meet such a person or family, even to interview them, and hopefully a song comes out of it. The song doesn't always happen. I mean, I've got pages that come from interviews with people, and they just never really, they never materialized.
Huh.
But, I mean, about half of them do, though.
Yeah.
And there's always a piece of you in the song. That's also maybe something I should be clear about. There's always a piece of the character that is actually me in disguise, you know? If I can't relate to any part of the story, I feel like the song just isn't alive, and it'll never be played.
Yeah. So obviously that's a topic that you're looking for. Have you got sort of a theme for a next record? You said you started thinking about that 6 or 8 months. This your last record's a couple of years now.
Yeah,
I've
got enough songs for a new CD, and they've been really challenging to write because I've done them in a really bizarre way. Have you ever heard of John Donne's Holy Sonnets?
No.
It's a series of sonnets that he wrote. And the last line of every sonnet is the first line of the next sonnet.
Oh, yeah.
And so it goes like that in a cycle. And when he gets to the last sonnet in the cycle, it's the first line of the first sonnet. So there, it's a circle, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's been a real... It's almost mathematical how I've had to work this out, but over the last 4 or 5 months, I've been able to come up with 10, maybe 12 of these songs that are all like they. It's like one big song in a circle, and the theme is not so overt as Canadian war stories or murder ballads. The theme has more to do with basically it's a comment on the whole binary nature of our thinking these days. Everybody's black, white, right, left, and these songs suggest that there is still hope for the world, but very gradually and slowly and imperceptibly almost, and that there are no good guys and there are no absolute bad guys. I haven't even gotten to the stage where I feel like I love all the songs yet. That takes a while too. There's a song that's a fan favorite that is, you know, in my, the few places that I play where they know me and they're very familiar with everything I've done. This song is unanimously a favorite. It's called "If We Keep What's Within Us Will Kill Us, But If We Give What's Within Us Will Save Us."
Yeah.
And that's an example of a song where I wrote it and I didn't play it for over a year. And it wasn't until a real loose kind of informal afternoon session at Gate 403 on Roncesvalles in Toronto, where I decided to throw it out at people that knew me well. And it was from that point where the song came alive because of other people's affirmation of it.
Oh yeah.
And now it's something of, I don't know, it's very rare that I won't play that in a two set night because it just goes over. And so it's a funny thing to create a song, to edit it down, to whittle away at it, to work at it, to listen to it 1,000 times in your headphones for months, and then learn the thing, and then there's still this weird long stage where it's like, do I love this song, or
yeah,
they're not all like that either, but that's the case with about half of these. So, and I'm not in the position I was 5 years ago where I needed a new album. I think there's too many albums in the world. I think there's too many songs. I don't want to release an album just because now I need a new excuse to promote myself again. That doesn't help me anymore. I mean, we write new songs because we have more things to share and more emotions to include in the live experience.
Yeah,
and I'm at that point now where it's hard for me to write a set list because nobody knows me everywhere I go. If I go play Winnipeg next week, most people are seeing me for the first time, and they're probably saying, how come I've never heard of you? Well, because it's the 21st century and the music model, the music business is dead. Rock and roll is dead. There's no, like, all of it is over. We've moved on to other things. Live music used to interest us as people. Now it's not. Now it doesn't matter to anybody. And it's, I don't want to ever go back in time, but sometimes I envy the idea of recording an album and then suddenly 5 days later, everyone in the Western world has heard Early Morning Rain.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way anymore. So now I'm stuck with what I think are a bunch of great songs that are perpetually new, always, everybody. Like, it's a bizarre experience.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I'm glad you got to see me at that solo stage at Mariposa.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they put me in some obvious workshops that, you know, the Murder Ballad workshop, the social justice workshop,
yeah,
the historical songs workshop. It wasn't until Sunday where I could do anything that wasn't actually a ballad.
Right.
Anyway, these are, this is not a virtue to sound like I'm complaining. I really don't want to be complaining. I have a blessed career, and it's so rare and beautiful that I get to go around to all these places in the world and play things I wrote. So these are good problems to have, I suppose.
But yes,
they're all things that are related to the fact that I'm not in any rush to hurry out a new CD.
Well, but don't wait too long, okay? I just got to the party in a big way, and now I'm eager to hear the next thing. So don't make me wait too long, you know?
I won't. I mean, no, I shouldn't. But I don't know. You know, there's also practical issues, too. I don't know. It's not cheap to release a CD, and it's an expense. It's a massive expense, and I've just gotten out of the debt that the first 10 years of this business caused me. No, it's crazy. People should know about this. I mean,
yeah,
like Tom Wilson used to have this great line, you know, you want to make $1 million in his business, you have to start with $2 million.
Yeah.
And you know, I was like everybody else. I found myself probably, I think it was $30,000 in debt after 8 years of doing it. Mm-hmm. And how are you supposed to justify this after a certain point? It's not because I'm not any good. Like, you know, you do enough live shows where you get beyond that insecurity. There's bigger problems, you know. You know, we can only make money when we tour. And even that has all kinds of expenses. So, and I don't want to crowdfund. There's something about that in Canada that drives me crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad stories, but there are good sides to it too as well. You know, we don't want you to go into debt to make a record necessarily. So people like me would love to support you. I know both sides of the argument. Believe me, I do. But there are people who'd love to support you and, you know, help make that happen. So,
well, that's yeah, I wonder about that. I know it's completely different from my American peers. They live in a different system. They don't have festivals that pay them like Mariposa pays their artists. They don't have grant organizations,
yeah,
that will help support an album. Having said all that, I've never spent a ton of money on the actual recording of an album because I pretty much keep things simple and solo, and that's a thing that puzzles me too. Why does everybody bury the song and their voice today in production?
Yeah.
Have you noticed this?
Like, yes. Oh, yes, I have.
I mean, 10,000 years of human foraging, hunting, farming, and texting, and the most expressive musical instrument the human beast has been able to create is the voice. And what ends up happening these days on, I would say, 9 out of 11 albums, and that might be being generous, the voice is not only altered in certain cases or affected, but it's buried under a multitude of tracks that are completely unnecessary and almost as always a little cliches.
Yeah.
And I've done stuff like that before. I've made mistakes in the studio before in certain ways because of that. Just not knowing any better, you know. This is a career that is any success we have in this career is built on a mountain of errors. And sadly, the songwriter leads a very public apprenticeship.
Yeah.
You know, we're not like writers where we get to scrap our ideas and the public never sees them. They're just in our basement. The songwriter makes all his mistakes on a stage, usually in front of people. That's unfortunate, but that's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
And there's been cases before where I think I've let myself been misled in the studio or, you know, piling on. I mean, I love everything I've done so far that I've recorded as a solo performer. But these days I'm more about going into the studio, keeping it really simple and really just squeezing out as much emotion in life I can out of just a hand against strings and the voice behind a mic, you know?
Yeah.
That turns me on. Like that's, and those tend to be the artists I'm drawn to these days too.
Yeah. John, I love talking to you. I could talk to you all day. I find you endlessly fascinating, but we are getting closer to the end of our time here on the show today. But I do thank you for talking to us for sure. And hopefully we'll get to do it again in the not too distant future. Cause there are many more conversations I'd love to have with you, sir.
Well, you should pick a 2 week period of the year where you'd be, where you know your home insurance has been updated and paid for.
Yeah.
And you're willing to maybe have me over for a house concert or
the thought has occurred to me. Yeah.
I do have enough contacts and ideas for that area of the world. I just haven't gotten to it in too long. I usually like building tours around festivals.
Yeah.
And Winnipeg just hasn't been interested. That's okay. They'll come around to my way of thinking eventually. They always do.
You said that the world always does. Yeah.
They do. Eventually. Eventually.
Sometimes
but it takes
you gotta
time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll stop rabbiting on here. Thank you for your time. Thank you for this interview, Jack.
Oh, I just love talking to you. You talked about two epic songs. We don't have time to play them both.
Which one?
But you talked about The Only Good Thing Is an Old Dog and If We Keep What's
oh, if
Within
we keep,
Us.
Yeah, yeah.
Which one would you like us to play?
Play If We Keep What's Within Us. All the right. Old Dog is really a live performance piece. So go with If We Keep What's Within Us. It's more universal. I if you're not inspired by that, you got to go to the doctor and check for a pulse.
Agreed. Thanks very much for talking, John. It's a real pleasure. And we will keep in touch. We'll figure something out.
Yes, and thank you for all your work in independent music. If it weren't for people like you, really, we'd only have Taylor Swift to listen to in public.
We wouldn't want that.
No, not 24/7 anyway, so thank you for that.
All right.
You're a first-rate host and interviewer, and you didn't ask me how long I've been playing guitar. Beautiful.
All right, well, thanks. Okay. Here's that song. The album is Moth No Rust.
Yes.
John Brooks.
We are the artists sweeping the floors. We are the poets sending out the spam. We're the prophets doing all the dishes. We are the misemployed, and we're working for the man. We are the bad backs doing all the heavy lifting. The children mentoring the elders. We're the engineers wearing the name tags. And we are soldiers trained as welders. We're fishermen on the tar sands. The night shift dragging into day. We are the millwrights doing telemarketing in a call center still called Thunder Bay. In a call center still called Thunder Bay. And if we keep what's within us, if we keep what's within us, what's within us will kill us. But if we give what's within us, if we give what's within us will save. We were nurses back home in Kingston. And now we're cleaning ladies in Toronto tonight, with a single mom shopping at Walmart. We can't afford the luxury to do what's right. We're pitchers at bat, goons on the power play, with the fans that can't afford a seat. We are the dietitians serving up the all-day breakfast, the vegans that are hanging up the near-dead meat. We're lawyers, but we are in business. Yes, we're corporate, and we are individuals by law. We're the babysitters that are raising our kids, and we're free to vote and be enslaved by it all. Yeah, we are free to vote and be enslaved by it all. And if we keep what's within us, if we keep what's within us, what's within us will kill us. But if we give what's within us, halfway give what's within us will save. Teaching our kids at school, we are the dancers waiting on the tables. We're the new and well-lettered illiterate, and looking for a parking spot for the vocationally disabled, with a service charge that used to be interest. And we're the grifters that are managing the banks. We're the academics hooking up the draft tank. We are your hosts here. We appreciate your business. Thanks. We are the shamans preaching the gospel. We're the Christians arming for war. We are the men, the women, the first children living at the end of metaphor. We're administrators in the pulpit. And we're decisively agnostic in the pews. And we're the journalists working at the second cup. And we're the statisticians reading us the news. We are the Marxists when there's nothing on TV. We live bourgeois, our debt is proletariat. We bought a used copy of Solzhenitsyn once. We haven't had a chance to pick it up yet. We're farmers building the suburbs, renumerators telling us the hard truths. We're the contractors drawing up the town plans. We're the shy girls tonguing in the kissing booths. We're the plumbers getting rid of the knob and tube. We're wannabe models showing us our new home. We're MBA CAs, minimum wage BAs, and we're team building, but we're all alone. We are historians at the front desk, and we're the social workers counting up the till. And we're the crane operator with the English degree, and we know we got a book or two in us still. We're the copywriters doing the curating. We are the doctors driving the cabs. We are the specialists, and we're trying to change a tie. We're your union delegates working as scabs. We're anesthetists, but we're faith healing. We're sportscasters with political views. We are the snake handlers advising elites. We do that downtown voodoo on the dollar for you. We are the folk singers singing pop songs. And we're that Yosei and hope playing wiggle with two no point of view. We're misogynists with the wall Toddy Gotts G cred M to the Y space 2. We are retired, but we are still working. Yes, we're linguists teaching business speak. We are the bards eulogizing tradition. Oh, the time is up for you, easy irony. The time is up for you, easy irony. So bring on a brand new shared suffering. Bring on a brand new something heavy. Bring on a brand new Renaissance gourd. Cause we know we're ready. Yeah, cause we know we're ready. And if we keep what's within us, If we keep what's within us, will kill us. But if we give what's within us, halfway give what's within us, we'll save. We'll save us. Well, they called me the Sarajevo Sandman. I had a lights-out kick to the head. It was the cage that taught me how to love as I killed. It was the cage that taught me never to hate. I was a child soldier back home in Tuzla. I've been fighting men since I was 10. I wore my dead brother's football jersey, throwing grenades made of Coca-Cola cans. I had a battery acid smell in my throat. It was the smell of adrenaline. In the cage I failed the Santa Fe, closest to God. In the cage I loved and never feared a thing. And I still miss the River Bosna. I miss that green water now and again. I work night shifts cleaning out offices, thinking about what I am, what I was then. And this world is all just one heart, where love and fear is all it ever beats. Oh, I wish I was still in the cage, where I loved more than I feared. Where I loved more than I feared. Yeah, we got out soon after the war. We had a mattress on the floor on Islington. And back home, Dad was an economist. In Rexdale, he took construction. I went to school at Thistletown Collegiate. 10 minutes, I was fighting Somalis. I joined a fight club at Shepherd and Dufferin. 10 months, I was fighting for the real money. It was the Rebel Biker Club. They took a $1,500 ante. I remember one night showing up in my jeans. But if you're a fighter, it's your eyes that win. Yeah, and my blood mixed with his blood. I needed him, he needed me. We were brothers and he knew that I loved him, even as his skull cracked under my knee. And this world is all just one heart, where love and fear is all it ever beats. Oh, I wish I was still in the cage, where I loved more than I feared. Where I loved more than I feared. One night I took $6,000 from a Russian. He wore the tats of the Boris Iconia. Oh, but his stiff eyes of fear gave him away. And on his stars, I made him kneel for me. Next day, I was working in a new cage, making $50,000 a week. Ah, but money taken from the devil goes back to the devil, so to speak. Tonight I open up the hood of my car just to smell that battery acid. Yeah, I miss the pain, I miss the hook when the fist miss the elbow lands. I miss the ring girls, yes, I miss my wife. I miss my daughter Madeline on my knee. I miss the sober days when I could still say that I loved more than I feared. That I loved more than I feared. And this world is all just one heart, where love and fear is all it ever beats. Yeah, I wish I was still in the cage, where I loved more than I feared. Where I loved more than I feared. Well, they called me the Sarajevo Sandman. I had a lights-out kick to the head.
Oh, what a song. That's a song called Cage Fighter. That's from the album Delicate Cages by John Brooks. You should really, really check out John Brooks. He has just wonderful records and wonderful songs. J-O-N. Brooks.ca, if you want to look him up, and you should, and we're certainly going to keep the pressure on him to get him out here one of these days and hear some more. Before that, from the album Moth Nor Rust, we heard, if we keep what's within us will kill us, but if we give what's within us will save us. And wonderful, wonderful stuff. Just had so much fun. And I once again got so carried away with John Brooks that I skipped a whole lot of my Mariposa memories. So we'll probably do that Thursday, 6:30 to 8 o'clock, Steel Belted Radio. Tune in for that. We will be pre-recorded on Thursday and next Sunday because I'm heading out to the Calgary Folk Festival. This year, the Calgary Folk Festival is just, it's an embarrassment of riches. If you if you look at the lineup, it's crazy. These are the people that I like that are going to be there. Bobby Baird Jr., Jeff Berner, Carolyn Mark, Chris Demeanor, the Brothers Landreth, Cat Power, the Cave Singers, Elizabeth Cook, the Dudes, Kathleen Edwards is going to be the Kathleen Edwards. Fortunate Ones, who are also at Mariposa. Robbie Fulks is going to be there. I can't read my own writing. Gregory Allen Isakov, Elon Jewell, Cor Blund, New Pornographers, Sam Outlaw, The Pines, The Sadies, Marty Stewart, Tallest Man on Earth, Ian Tyson, White Horse, all at one festival. I think that festival wins this year is what I'm saying. So I got to go check that out. So we won't be here, but we will be pre-recorded. Hopefully you'll tune in for that. And hopefully you will stay tuned today for some stuff from our friend Christian, West End Dumplings, coming up right away here on this station. Then after that, it's Lyle with Waxy's Dargle. 6 o'clock, Gail with the Comfort Cafe will probably be here. And like I said, I'll be back Thursday, next Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m. Check out tellthebandtogohome.com. And please do stay tuned.